With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, and welcome to the newest installments on the RahapUps Network, coverage of the Hot Mess Express that is the 90 Day Fiancé franchise. My name is Priyazan Vakili, and I will be your conductor and host of what is going to be, quite frankly, the most insane show I have ever podcasted about. Now, I know that I have talked about this once before. I did a season six recap with one person who is actually going to be my guest for the premiere episode here. Before I go any further, let me introduce to you the best. It's Liana Boris. Liana, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for bringing me on to talk with you about 90 Day Fiancé. It has become one of my favorite shows for maybe all the wrong reasons. But nonetheless, I cannot wait to discuss everything from Happily Ever After, which is the spinoff I believe that we're going to be talking about today.
Yes, yes. So before we go any further, so 90 Day Fiancé, yeah. If you're tuning in for the first time and you're like, what are they talking about? This isn't The Masked Singer or anything else that either of them have talked about that I know of. Here's the quick explanation for you. So 90 Day Fiancé is a franchise on the TLC network that goes through the story of couples who are, there's one pair and one is American. The other is from a land far away, sometimes close, depending. But basically, it's the story of a couple that has one American in it and one person who's foreign. And it goes through their life of them trying to move to the United States and be together. And typically, when they go through the K-1 visa process, which is what they need to come here, they would then have 90 days from when the partner comes to the States to get married and to live here. Therefore, they are the 90 Day Fiancé. So when I said franchise, you're probably thinking, well, that's just one show. Why did you say franchise? It's because 90 Day Fiancé isn't just one show. They've got like eight different versions that goes out. They've got The Other Way, which is the exact same story I gave you, but the American part of the couple moves to the said country instead. They have Before the 90 Days, which documents their relationship blossoming and growing before they even get to the process of getting engaged and getting married. And there's Happily Ever After, which looks at couples that have already gone through it and have been on the show and are now, we're looking at where they are now and what they're doing and how they're doing. So, and those are not even all of them, but those are kind of like the core four. Would you agree, Liana, or am I missing one?
Yeah, I would say those are sort of the main shows that follow the couples in a similar, you know, 5 to 7 couples per season format. Mm-hmm. There are a couple other shows, but we don't need to talk about those. Yeah, I mean, I think the basic premise is essentially this started as, oh, there's this very interesting immigration process in the United States where if you have a foreign fiancé, you can apply for this K-1 visa, and then your foreign fiancé can move to the United States United States. And as long as you get married within 90 days, your foreign fiance can stay here in the United States. And it started as this very sort of, I don't know, sweet is maybe the right word, with season one of the 90 Day Fiance show. But then as Puya was talking about, it's really just exploded, not only in the number of spinoffs that they're doing, but also just in the insanity and the drama. And so I think that really it's a show that has grown a lot within the past couple of years, not only, like I said, in the number the number of shows, but also in its fandom.
That's right. It really has become a phenomenon. I think it is the show that has put TLC back on the map. I think TLC knows this because this is the show that TLC focuses on the most. I would argue they have so many iterations of it. And it has been getting crazier and crazier, especially with the one we're talking about today. It really just is a cast of insane people and messy people. Now, to just quickly before we jump into talking about it, so I want to explain what the format is for those of you tuning in now and trying to figure out what's going on. So, yes, the 90 Day Fiancé franchise will be covered proper with its own wrap up on the Wrap Ups Network. So that's happening. But it's going to be a one-stop shop. So typically what you're going to have is it's kind of a this week in 90 day. And we're going to go through all the 90 day stuff. So the two right now we've got Happily Ever After and The Other Way going on. So we're going to go through those. We're going to talk about the couples, anything that comes up on social media. We're going to cover all of that under this one umbrella right here. There will be question threads put up. So if you have any questions, you can definitely ask them and they will be answered on this podcast. And I will be here every week once with a new guest or guests, depending on the week, and we will tackle all the things that went on. Now, to start it off, obviously, so right now we're in the middle of two seasons. We're in the middle of Happily Ever After, and we're in the middle of The Other Way. And by middle, I mean we're literally 7 episodes and 8 episodes deep into the show right now, soon to be 9. So I figured it would make sense to split the two shows up for the first week only and have a catch up of each so that we have a full download of what's happened so far. And if you're jumping in today, you listen to this, you can just hop onto the next episode and be current with what's going on with the coverage. And I asked Liana, of course, to join me for the first one, the Happily Ever Afters, because A, I know she knows the show back to front. B, we did this together, was it about a year and a half ago, you would say, where we did season 6 coverage for the one time?
Yes, that sounds about right.
Yeah. And if there's anyone that knows the struggle of this process, it would be myself and Liana Boris. So I think this is where we go. I think this was the right choice for the start.
Yeah, I think this is going to be fun. We'll catch you up on everything that's going on with these couples and discuss what happened in this most recent episode, which I believe, what episode are we talking about today? Episode 7, 8?
Well, we're talking about everything up to episode 7.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. So 7 episodes deep now into Happily Ever After.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so do you want to just jump right into it?
Yeah, so what I figured would be the best way to go about this, since we're talking about 7 episodes of a show and we're not trying to be here for 7 hours, is we go through couple by couple. We talk about the couple, we talk about their past, their present, what's going on with them on the show, interesting tidbits there, and we go to the next couple and so on until we're done. There's a total of 6 couples, so this shouldn't take that long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah.
But some of them are garbage.
I mean, to be frank with you,
I have a lot of complaining to do, Puya.
We're on the same page. So we watched this. We've been watching the season independently from one another. I have a lot of things to say, and almost none of them are positive. They truly gave us an all-star cast, but it's like the worst of the worst people on the planet. Worst couple awards all over the map. So we're definitely going to be on the same page with that. I'm very excited to dive in. I'm not going to lie to you. I feel like a roast is coming on, but I would like to give you the honors to pick the first couple. We can just go wherever you want to start here and get into the madness.
Okay. So I guess we'll go with who the first couple that's on my list. And that is Elizabeth and Andre.
Okay. I forgot that you do pronounce his name the way it's meant to be pronounced. So Exciting. Okay, so yeah, take us away. Where did we first meet Elizabeth and Andre?
It's Andre, yes. although Elizabeth apparently is the only one who seems to pronounce his name that way. So yeah, so Elizabeth and Andre, we met originally in the fifth season of 90 Day Fiancé. They then also went on to be on Happily Ever After season 4. So now they're back for their third official season on season 5 now of Happily Ever After. And what's interesting about them is because we've seen them on the show, but we've also seen them on Pillow Talk, which is essentially the other members of 90 Day Fiancé watching fellow castmates be on the show. And they just like give commentary. So it's kind of interesting because we get to see them from the show perspective, but then we also get a little bit of insight into their relationship kind of outside of that when they're just like chilling and giving commentary. But anyway, I digress. So who are they? Well, Elizabeth comes from a family of Karens, a family of awful people, and she lives in Florida, and she met Andre when I believe she was traveling to Ireland and he was living in Ireland because he's actually originally from Moldova. Which they essentially only have like two major storylines. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that he's from Moldova. And so he's like more conservative. But anyway, whatever. So they get married in season 5. They're on Happily Ever After. They have a kid. And kind of the big thing with them is that Andre is, like I said, super conservative. But at the same time, he also like refuses to get a job, but it's kind of unclear whether or not Elizabeth supports this because she's always complaining about the fact that he never has a job. But then she doesn't really seem to like in this last episode, they seem to kind of be like, oh, but like you said, you were okay with that. Anyway, Andre always says he's going to work. He like was going to be a truck driver for a while and then he's going to be a handyman. And now in this season, they have their kid and they're planning like a second wedding in Moldova.
Yeah, so they've gone through the process. They've gotten married, and now he can stay in the States permanently. But he wants a ceremony in Moldova for his family and his side of things.
Sorry.
What is happening right now?
Sorry, Pearl was yelling. Sorry, my cat was yelling like crazy.
This takes me back to Masked Singer podcast big time with Pearl.
Yeah, apparently she was like, no, I'm going to be cool for the Drag Race podcast. But when you have to do Happily Ever After, I'm going to yell at you for a while. She also really hates Andre.
It's what's not to hate, right? That, and that's the big thing for me. So he wants to have the ceremony in Moldova. And from this season, from what I can tell from this season, he did not really plan this properly. He kind of just sprung it onto Elizabeth and her family at Elizabeth's dad's birthday party, who what we know about previous seasons, Elizabeth's dad has been very much financially supporting this relationship for the longest time, especially while Andre went through his decisions of, do I want to be a truck driver? I want to be a truck driver, but oh, I don't want to be you know what? I'll be a handyman. He's very much trying to figure out what he wants to do in life. And that involves him not working while that's happening and then being mad at not working because Elizabeth's bringing in the money and he's doing what he calls the housewives chores, the woman's chores, which is not a great thing to hear. It's very angering for me. He's an idiot. But so basically this ceremony, like, can you speak more about what he plans for this wedding, what this beloved ceremony in Moldova is meant to be like?
Let me just say one more thing about Andre. So the thing is that, like you said, he's trying to like figure out what he wants to do in life, but he is so demeaning to Elizabeth, and he has sort of this, very gender specific roles view of how a household is supposed to be run.
Right.
But the thing is then he's also like not going out and doing the work. So in this season, we actually see his friends kind of like challenge him a little bit of like, oh, well, you say, you know, the woman's supposed to stay home, take care of the kids and clean, but like you're not working. So, you know, like kind of what's the deal with that? Which is always super interesting. But I will say that at least, look, Elizabeth agrees to this, okay? She seems to be fine with it, even though they complain. I just feel like their drama is so annoying. It's always about the same stuff. The talk about a couple that is past their expiration date. Like, I don't even understand how Elizabeth and Andre ended up on Happily Ever After at all, let alone in their second season.
They need money. They need money. That's why they're here.
Yeah, so Elizabeth works for her dad because her dad runs like a real estate company or something, like rents out apartments and things. And like they were living in one of her dad's properties. But then Andre was like, no, like we have to live on our own and we have to move out. But then they ask the dad to pay for it. Like, OK, so we're going to move out of the property that like you own that would be way cheaper for us to live in. But like, can you pay for our new place? Also, Andre is like insisting that the dad pay for the wedding as well. And the dad has even offered him a job. Like Elizabeth's dad has been like, Andre, like, do you want to work for me? And Andre is like, oh, I don't want to be under your thumb. Like, I don't want to be, you know, beholden to you or whatever. It's so annoying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the beauty of it, right? Is that he doesn't want to work for the dad because he doesn't want the dad to have the upper hand and control in this relationship. But the dad legitimately finances both Elizabeth's job, finances a lot of their house stuff, I'm pretty sure, and then is being told, it's customary for the bride's parents to pay for the Moldovan wedding. And he seems to be okay with all of this, but then gets in his little feelings when he's called the housewife for whatever reason. It's like you're taking care of your kids and you're, you know, keeping a happy home for yourself, your kid, and your wife. Why is this such a bad deal to you? I don't understand it. Like, what part of your, because like, here's the juicy part, right? What did he do before this in Ireland when they met? He was a bouncer. He was a bouncer. So I don't know if he misses the lucrative days of standing in a trench coat and then checking people's IDs. But I mean, this seems more fulfilling to me. You're just not looking at it correctly. And it is disheartening. It really is disheartening. Because I think don't get me wrong, Elizabeth's family is a hot mess of its own. But he doesn't get any sympathy points for the way he treats Elizabeth time and time again to me. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing is that he was, okay, this is what I was talking about with the fact that they were on Pillow Talk. Because on Pillow Talk, he's much more palatable. Like, he's annoying sometimes, yes, but you can clearly see they get along super well. Like, it's clear why they're a couple together, which is why sometimes on Happily Ever After, it just feels like their drama is so manufactured, just because you can see them on Pillow Talk get along so well. So that's also super annoying. But I really just like complaining about Elizabeth's family. So, well, and him. I guess this is okay, look, if there is one couple that I had to skip because if I needed snacks or a bathroom break, this is the couple that I would skip because it's always the same stuff. It's like the family interrogating Andre not wanting to work, Andre saying something antiquated to Elizabeth.
You need to stop saying his name like that. Let's just call him
Andre. I can't help it. That's how Elizabeth says it. She just rolls that R, baby.
Yeah. And like the thing is, his Andre's family doesn't help either. Like, so I agree with you that he's been palatable in the past. For me, the minute he stepped out of that airplane in Moldova, he changed. He reverted back to what he thinks his family wants to see in him very clearly. And the thing is, it's not even a thing that's in his head. It's very clear through the communication that gets funneled into him and then into Elizabeth that his family believes firmly that the roles in this relationship are reversed, that Elizabeth needs to listen more to Andre, that Elizabeth needs to, you know, do more towards Andre. When in fact, I feel like despite both of them being trash people, Andre just seemingly is living two lives where he's happy with decisions, but he's also mad at all the decisions. And he wants like her parents to pay for things, but then he's also mad that they're paying for things. So it doesn't make any type of sense to me at all.
No, I don't think he's mad that they're paying for stuff. I think he likes it. Like, I think the disconnect is between what he believes traditional gender roles should be and then the reality of the situation. But I think he likes the reality of the situation. Also, he's been insufferable the whole time. I mean, just on Pillow Talk is when he was like at least less annoying.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying is that he seems to be happy with it, but then he masks it around his family, which then makes them trash Elizabeth, which I'm not about.
I mean, it's really just the is it not his is it the his brother's wife, right? That was really just the annoying one. Because the parents were fine, I thought. I actually thought his parents are really cute and really sweet. And I was like, how did you raise such an annoying human?
How did this demon come from your household is what I would like to know.
Yeah.
I did like in this last episode when... So wait. So one of the biggest pieces of drama from this family is that the family and Andre clearly clash heads, right? And it's mostly her sisters and him that clash the most heads. And they're mad that they now cannot come to the wedding because they didn't have enough time to prepare and to be able to get there. So they're not making it to the wedding, right? Mm-hmm. But her dad and her brother end up landing, I believe in episode, I want to say six, at the around the end of episode six. And this is interesting to me because one of my favorite montages from this couple in this season has been the in the car ride when the brother's asking dumb stuff like, does Amazon deliver here? Do you guys have a fish market? That was very fun for me. But the biggest mystery now is, so Andre is being very cagey about what he used to do in Moldova before he moved to Ireland. And for some reason, Elizabeth's dad does not want to let this go and needs to get to the bottom of this mystery.
Yeah, which this makes absolutely, I mean, fine. What, like, sure. They're, first of all, they're already married, Elizabeth and Andre. So, like, whatever. But that whole family all has their very own set of mugshots. Like, Chuck, the father, got arrested for missing child support payments of like $17,000. The brother who was there, who's also doing part of the interrogation, has been arrested twice, once for a DUI and once for coke possession. Both of the sisters have been arrested as well. I think one for driving without a license and the other one for also driving without a license and then something else. I can't remember. Anyway, regardless, that family just has like no right to be interrogating Andre because they're already together. Y'all have your crazy history. Like, I'm sure you don't want to be interrogated about that, Chuck.
Yeah, no, seriously. And it's funny because it almost like felt to me like Chuck was really starting to like try and push Andre's buttons from the minute he landed. It really did feel that way. It was like, oh, this is the airport. Oh, in Frankfurt, we had to walk a whole mile to get to the, to our gate. It's like, well, yeah, the country size is different. And he's like, oh, no. It's there's more people are leaving here than arriving here. I was like, that's not necessary, Chuck. Why are you saying that? That seems mean.
I still think my favorite line, though, from when before the interrogation started, like when they were just asking questions, was, do you guys eat salad here? Which was such a weird question.
So dumb.
And then, of course, we get the classic, do they have Walmarts here? Which was also Debbie's concern, someone who we'll talk about later when they go to Brazil. So,
yeah. So as an American, do you identify with if there's a Walmart in the country you're visiting, you will feel more safe and like, secure? Like, what's the deal?
I feel at home. Honestly, one of the things that's I'm just always so embarrassed because the Americans are always the worst people, usually in the couple.
More
often than not, the American is the person who I'm always the more like more embarrassed by. But usually, I mean, it's hard to root for any of these couples.
No, it really ends up becoming every season by like the finale week. I'm like, so which one of these couples do I hate the least? Mm-hmm. More often than that. And then there's always like one that I might be like, oh, you're harmless. I'll root for you. But usually it's like, oh, you're all the worst. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, I feel like I have nothing else to offer on Elizabeth and Andre. This is pretty much where we were left is that she got baptized and converted to, correct me if I'm wrong, Orthodox Christianity,
mm-hmm.
Orthodox Christian. So she did that. And then she wasn't too keen on the lack of equality in the dynamics, which is what she was learning. And we've already talked about. And now Chuck and the brother are there. And the preview showed us that they're going to have the brother, whose name has already been forgotten by me, and Andre are going to have a face-to-face confrontation that looks heated. So I'm excited to see where that goes.
Yeah, Andre would lay him out, though. Like, oh, yeah. He was the a bouncer, nothing. Too. So
yeah, he literally got paid to do this. So yeah. The brother picked the wrong match.
All right. Well, who do you want to talk about next?
I'm excited. Okay, allow me to introduce, not myself, the next couple. I want to go with a couple that I liked when we covered them that one time in the, I believe it was season 6 of the 90 Day Recap. But I want to talk about Kalani and Asuelu.
Okay.
That's where I want to go.
All right, sounds good.
Yeah, so their story is interesting. So they meet in Samoa, if you're trying to say it the way Asuelu would say it. And Asuelu worked at a resort there where Kalani was vacationing, and they hit it off and they slept together. And then I believe she got pregnant, and then he moved over to the States. And one of my favorite 90 Day scenes is him getting to the airport for the first time and doing a traditional dance for Kalani at the airport, and then Kalani's look of terror. It's an incredible scene. Definitely YouTube it. It's a good time.
Okay, yeah. So a few details. So Kalani's dad is actually Samoan. And yes. So they were like going back to visit. And there was in the first season, so their original season was season 6 of 90 Day Fiancé. Mm-hmm. And Kalani's dad, Lo, was like, don't be with someone from Samoa. And then Kalani like goes off and not only has sex with him, but loses her virginity to him because she was raised as a Mormon and remained a virgin, according to the story, until she slept with Asuelu. And so then she got pregnant. And then, like you said, that was why like they ended up deciding to get together. But now they have two kids. She got pregnant again, had their second kid. They're married. And that is sort of where we left them in season 6.
Yes. And now we come into this season and Asuelu has a part-time job, looking like he's like the sample person at a store, and he loves to play volleyball and video games. Those are his two hobbies. Volleyball makes him feel like he has friends, so good for him. But you say good for him in the first episode. This was for me a heel turn for Asuelu in this season. I definitely left the last time I saw him liking him. He was endearing. I rooted for him. I was like, he's a bit of a man child, but he'll figure his stuff out. Breaking news, still a man child after having two childs.
Yeah, so there's something, I mean, and I think we all kind of knew this from the first season, but there always feels like there's something a little off with Asuelu. Like, sometimes it's hard to tell. But with the language barrier, because, you know, he's speaking English, you know, when we hear from him. But mm-hmm. he's just a little maybe on the, like, I'm not sure if he's slow or something, like something is going on, because he really does behave like a child in the way that he handles pretty much every situation. And in the first season, it was endearing. And now that they're really sort of having to deal with challenges, I just feel horrible for Kalani here, having to deal with essentially taking care of three children.
Yeah, I feel like, to me, Asuelu just plays off as Tom Hanks in Big, where it's like he had a wish when he was a kid to be an adult, and now was an adult and just got stuck, and now is doing adulty things and doesn't know how to do them. Because remember, in season 6, when we met Kalani, I did not like her. I did not like the family. I was like, you guys are trying to be the low-rent Kardashians. The dad thinks he's a mafia boss. Like, none of this is good. It's too much like drama, too much exaggeration. But definitely the opposite thing for me now here with Kalani is I feel bad for her too. And I'm rooting for her, and I hope that she's doing well, because I can tell that it is not easy trying to wrangle a man child. Because here's the thing. Clearly logic is not working with him. He also, similar to Andre, does harbor some feelings that are outdated in gender roles and gender norms that he carries, which is not great, because And he basically, in front on a drive in front of Kalani's mom, talks about how her job is easier than Samoan women because they have a washing machine and they have all these amenities. And in Samoa, they do everything by hand. So what she's doing is easy, and he doesn't understand why she's complaining, which is just not great at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, the Oswelu saying like, oh, it's sort of similar to what you were saying with Andre. And that creates a lot of tension because at least in this season, Oswelu is only working part time at this like health food store. The thing is that I've heard from the interwebs that he actually was like working as a handyman for a while. Take that, Andre. He also he's like in a picture. Yes, I'm looking. OK, this was spotted outside of Zion National Park, but he's a model. And it's for the Spirit of Polynesia. And it's like an exhibit that's going to be or something. Anyway, so he's like been seen in a couple other pictures, which is crazy that he's been the most successful model on 90 Day Fiancé. So he is like doing other stuff. But I think the principle of the situation still stands.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it's just it's not at all. I mean, here's the thing, right? It's like, how are you going to sit there and talk smack when you have ample free time to play video games and have a hobby in volleyball? Because one of the big stories at the start of the season was, hey, I feel like we haven't been going out and doing stuff ourselves. And so I was like, no, we went to the movies that once. She said, yeah, it was 4 months ago. So let's have a date. Let's do something together. So when you have ample time to do stuff solo, and clearly you're not really holding any of the burdens of taking care of the child. I shouldn't say burden, but like you don't have any of the tasks of taking care of the children. Like, what position are you to say that, oh, that seems easy? Then she said it, and I think it. Do it. Then you do it for a little bit. See how that feels. You know, like put the shoes on.
Yeah, the other thing from their drama this season, so is that Oswelu is feeling very homesick. He wants to go back to Samoa, and he wants to take his children and Kalani, I believe, I assume, with them. But the thing is that there's a measles outbreak in Samoa. And so, you know, both Kalani and their doctor are like, yeah, so you should like not take your kids there. And Oswelu is like, I don't understand. Like, I still want to go. Like, he really is. In just all of these different ways, the worst man child. It's oh my gosh.
No, my at the when they visited the doctor to like talk about the vaccine, she's like, yeah, well, typically this vaccine is supposed to be for like kids, babies in the age of like 12 to 15 months, but like it'll work for like someone between like 7 to 11. That's fine. And she's saying all this, and all he says after she's spoken a whole monologue is, so you're saying if they do the vaccine, they can go, right? She's like, I wouldn't recommend it, but yes, see, she said, yes, we can go. We can still go. That's the plan. And to me, that's just insane because, you know, when there's a little bit of a chance, don't risk it, right? Really don't risk it. Homesickness aside, because homesickness, yes, it is a real thing. You know, I feel homesick myself, but at the same time, there's an understanding that when there's stuff going on in the world, you got to put the health of your loved ones ahead of your desires, whatever those may be. So I think this was a bad move, but obviously, again, it's hard to like try and reason with us, Willie, because he is a man child and he doesn't conduct himself well. So basically this happens. Kalani's like, we are not going to Samoa. We are putting this plan on pause. And he gets pouty. He gets upset. They're going to, I believe, California to celebrate one of their son's birthdays. Mm-hmm. And he locks himself in he leaves, first of all, after the argument they had in the car. He leaves, gets on a bus, and just gives his mic back to the production team and just goes to a hotel for a night or so. And then, get this part. He gives Kalani the wrong location three times in a row and makes her go to the wrong place to pick him up thrice before he gives her the actual location. She picks him up. He comes home, and now he's locked himself in a room just playing video games the whole time, just not talking to the family, not engaging with her dad, her, like, anybody. Like, what is this behavior?
Yeah, I mean, this is what we're talking about when we talk about man-children. There's actually a few different man-children on this season and then the other season the other way that's airing right now.
Oh, so many man-children in the year 2020 on 90 Day Fiancé. I'll tell you that right now.
Right. I can't tell if he might be the worst. It's just so hard to know what Oswaylu is capable of because, like I said, in the first season, it was sort of part of his charm. But now it's just like, you're rude. And really inconsiderate.
Here's the thing. I'm not willing to say he's the worst because of his childlike behavior. For some reason, I'm more fooled into thinking that Oswaylu will learn and will improve as time goes on. Whereas the other ones are like fully formed adults who are children. And I think their time to learn has passed and they're just going to stay being awful. So I feel like there is redemption with Oswaylu. I do. I just think that it's going to be a long road of learning the things that he needs to learn.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess we'll have to wait and see. I mean, there's also then the whole storyline with like his mom and sister asking for money, which is kind of complicated because that's pretty normal that you see people send money to their families once they come to the United States. But this is particularly weird because I feel like aren't they in Washington or whatever? So they're like in the United States. But he hasn't seen them. Like, they didn't come down to, like, come to the wedding. I don't know. Like, the whole situation is just very weird.
It's very confusing. But, yeah, his mom and one of his sisters, I believe, live in Washington State. So, and that's kind of the compromise that we ended up finding out is going to happen, is that because they can't go to Samoa, they figured the middle ground is Oswaylu wants to go see his mom and his sister. And we heard about this earlier in the season and got reconfirmed in the last ep where her family ask for money and Kalani never allows them to get the actual amount they describe and makes them take less of a cut. Because, and I feel like kind of rightfully so, he's working a part-time job, right? So there's not that much income coming in and they have two infants. Naturally, it makes sense to not send more money that way when you have two kids and you're trying to raise them, right? And you don't have like a full, like a lot of income coming in. Mm-hmm. So I feel like his mom was asking for 1,000 and then they said, we're sending 500 and they were like, oh, that's not enough. And then her sister said, I think, focus on us before you focus on you. And I'm like, hey, that's lovely if they're just a newlywed couple that's just them. But they have two babies. Like, these are your nieces and nephews. Like, how are you going to be like, no, give us the money? That just seems, you know, but I also like, you know, coming from parents who, my family, my mom and dad moved to Dubai from Iran and then started a family there. That's where I was born. And I know that my dad sent some money back. He would send to his like siblings and stuff. And I had classmates who their families, like, their dad like lived in Dubai and worked and they lived with their dad, but then their mom lived in Pakistan and they would send money over frequently. So there, obviously this is a thing where like, if you end up moving to a country where there is a bigger income, then yes, because the exchange rate works, you send the money over because that sustains a living there. But then in this situation with two new kids and a part-time job, I feel like that's a hard bargain to ask for, even though I understand the tradition and I understand where they're coming from.
Right. I mean, the thing is that then like he needs to say that, right? Like, this is the reason why. He doesn't really stand up for Kalani.
No, he passes the buck over to her like, oh, you never let us do that amount. It's because, yeah, you're making her be the bad cop by just being like, oh, we can't send the money. That's tough. It's like Chris Traeger being like, is there anything we can do, Ben? And Ben's like, no. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, Ben says we can't do it. Like, you got to step up. You got to, like, you know, really do your thing. But yeah, my favorite line from this couple came from Kalani and Oswaylu after they made up with the spat they had. Mm-hmm. After her dad went full, like, you need to be a man speech to him because, and I'm quoting, he promised his wife and his daughter that he wasn't going to put hands on Oswaylu. Mm. After this, Oswaylu gets convinced to apologize. He does. And she asks, are you going to throw me under the bus again? And he says, no, I want you to be the bus driver. I was like, that is the most romantic thing ever. but it came from you. So I don't know if you realize how romantic it is, or you meant it to just be like, no, I'm not going to do it. But I loved it.
I think the latter would be my guess.
Yeah. I think in this relationship, you are also the bus driver. So I felt like that's a line I would like to use someday.
Okay, well, some, put it in your pocket and save it for later.
When you accuse me of throwing you under the bus, I will definitely bring this back. But unfortunately, we watch the same show, so you'd be like, why are you referencing a man child to me? I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it might not work.
Right.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So sure, I feel like we talked about everything. We haven't really seen much of Kalani's sister, which we did see a lot of her in season 6, and her brother, who I'm keen on seeing again. We haven't seen him. He was the cool guy that season. We haven't seen him yet. I'm keen to see him again, but we haven't seen them, so I'm imagining we'll see them at some point in some capacity.
Yeah, I mean, we did get to see her, the sister, a little bit at the birthday party, but I think that was it.
Yeah, no, that was very brief, and she obviously stood up for Kalani and said she didn't like the way Asuela was treating her, which is kind of picking up where we left off with her anyways from the previous season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
And just like the band Oasis say at the start of Wonderwall, we're going to throw it back to you, Liana. What would you like to talk about next? Which couple?
Okay, I want to talk about Colt and Larissa.
Okay, this is a heavy hitter one. So, I'm excited.
Yeah, so Colt and Larissa were originally on season 6 of 90 Day Fiancé. They got married at the end of the season and were then featured again on Happily Ever After season 4, yeah. In which they got divorced. So like now we're just following them independently on their own little escapades. So originally Larissa is from Brazil, Colt is from Las Vegas, and they got, like I said, married, divorce, all that jazz. But the main thing with them is that Larissa actually had multiple domestic violence arrests because Colt called the cops on her. And so that's something that we definitely see play out in this season. And then I would be remiss if I did not mention that Colt lives with his mother, Debbie. And so when Larissa came to the United States, the three of them all lived together, and the Colt to Debbie relationship was a major source of tension because Colt should be, okay, there's another TLC show called Smothered, and Colt should be on Smothered because he has a very close relationship with Debbie. It's terrifying, in fact. And so that's sort of like their history. So then, like, in this season, it's really just them doing their own thing.
Yeah, this is, to me, the most loosely cast couple for this show at this point. They were married for 6 months. They got divorced during the show's timeline in Happily Ever After. Why are they here? Is it because they're captivating television? Let me tell you, they are not. The best part of this couple being on this show this season was the opening shot of the season when Colt was working out. After that, it's been nothing but downhill. But they really truly are the hot mess of the hot messes. They are the worst couple, and they just seem to find more and more ways to be the worst and make worse decisions for themselves, which is kind of what we see unravel from both sides. I guess the fun part with them, Liana, is that they do have two separate storylines. So it's not like they're both going through the same trip. They have separate trips. So let's split them up even further. Who do you want to talk about first, Colt or Larissa?
Okay, well, first of all, I just want to say that this is a couple that I love to hate. Like, I understand there are a lot of people who are like, well, when your relationship is done, you should be off the show. There are a couple of other people like this. We're not going to talk about her today, but Darcy is another person who's been on 90 Day Fiancé before in a couple of iterations, even though she's no longer with the original guy that she was on. And now actually her and her twin sister are getting a spinoff. But that's a conversation for a different day. Yeah. What I just hate about, like, Elizabeth and Andre can go. That's like, I hate to hate them. The Colt and Larissa are, I love to hate them because they're both just so fat. They're so fascinating to me. And I think we can probably, let's talk about, oh my God. Let's talk about Colt first, because Larissa is a little bit intertwined with Colt's storyline. Yeah. Because Colt is now dating this woman, Jess. Mm-hmm. Jess is also Brazilian, even though Jess was in Chicago in the United States working as an au pair. But it's really all about kind of that relationship, the Jess Colt Debbie relationship.
Yeah, that's the primary storyline for Colt. So Colt has been dating Jess long distance. And so during this season, actually, Colt ends up going to Chicago to see her. And that's where we're introduced to her. He gets introduced to her friends. And they try and go out that night all together. And Colt says, no, I'm tired. It was the last night that he was there. And he wanted to go home and just spend the last night together, if you know what I'm saying. And she wanted to go out and he had a problem with this. And their relationship does seem like it's like ice, fire, like they're fine. And then they're fighting, but then they're completely fine the next day. The fact that so he was married to Larissa for 6 months. And then 6 months later, he starts dating Jess. And Jess initially seemed fine to me. But the more and more we've seen of Jess, the more and more I'm like, oh, you are trouble. You are definitely also trouble. So,
yeah. I mean, I'm not going to... I was about to say, I don't want to guess someone's intentions, but I am literally about to do this. Like, Jess is 100% a clout chase. Like, there's just, their whole storyline is just a whole freaking mess. It's so incredibly incestuous. Like, Jess actually, well, I don't, anyway, whatever. They're just, they're freaking insane. And I don't really understand why Jess would be with Colt anyway, because Colt is awful. Colt has an incestuous relationship with Debbie. Like, Debbie just, Debbie is a piece of work. They're both pieces of work.
Debbie needs, forget Darcy. Debbie needs her own TLC show. She does. Because I watched the last two episodes. Colt's storyline, I watched it through Debbie's eyes. And the way I see it, Debbie's on a mission to make sure that her son never leaves her, no matter what happens. And anytime he gets close to leaving, she gets him back and hypnotizes him back once more. It's so funny to me. And it's just such a strange, strange relationship.
A lot of the original drama between Larissa and Colt was because of Debbie. So Larissa wanted to move out, wanted to live in a different place. Larissa wanted to get rid of the super ugly slot machine that Debbie had, and Debbie didn't want to get rid of it. I mean, essentially, Colt is dating Debbie also. And so Debbie really doesn't want to share Colt with anybody else. So it was the same deal with Larissa. And we're having it again here with Jess. And so there is a, you know, Debbie is essentially trying to sabotage, as far as I'm concerned, Colt and Jess's relationship. I think she even freaking outright says it, like, in the preview for next week.
Yeah, I think, well, because here's the thing. I think Debbie really wants Colt to herself. That's her boy. That's her son. She lost her husband. I don't remember exactly how many years ago, but Colt is like her one family. So I understand that she's attached to her son and wants to keep her son. And however, I was like, I'm not willing to let Debbie just make these grand assumptions about people, which is kind of the staple of the 90 Day franchise, where the American part of the couple, that family always assumes that this relationship is based on, I'm trying to fool my way into a green card. That's what he's doing, or that's what she's doing. That's the plan. I'm on to them. And in this instance with Jess, I didn't want to think it initially. I genuinely think that's what's happening. That's what I think is happening. It's my personal read on the situation, especially after watching the last couple of episodes. I think Debbie's right. Her instincts are right. But because Debbie's an insane person, she doesn't do this like she doesn't do this in a genuine way. She does this in a, I'm mad and I'm Debbie and I'm done with this situation. I don't want to be here. So because Debbie, the sequel to what happened last season, Debbie is now going to Brazil with her son, Colt, to meet Jess's family. This is happening. And the idea of Debbie abroad is so much fun to me. Again, I just need Debbie to go and visit from now on. This is what Debbie does from now on. Okay, Liana? Debbie is like Detective Debbie. And every season, they pick a couple that Debbie flies over to meet and talk to and then decide whether or not they're in this for the wrong reasons. I need the Detective Debbie show.
As long as she can ask where the Walmart is, because she was also like, well, do they have Walmarts in Brazil? Which is like the biggest question that anybody needs to ask. I think my favorite thing about Debbie is Debbie likes to say the phrase, I'm done, like mm-hmm. when she's fighting with people. She has a really great line in her original season where she's fighting with Larissa and she's just like, I'm done. And that's I'm how done. She says it. And it's so funny. And even in this most recent episode, when she's fighting with Jess, she's like, I'm done.
I'm very appreciative Classic. For Debbie, because anytime we have or will ever have an argument, none of us can end it with I'm done, because we will both remember that and it takes us out of the fight, which is awesome.
Yeah. So, I need to complain a little bit more about Colt. So Colt like thinks he's so cool.
Wait,
he has these eyebrows.
Before you go further, I want to take this moment in the middle of the podcast, if you're still listening, to say we love this show. By no means are we saying we hate this show. I understand there's a lot of hate involved in describing some of these people, but we both love this show and have been watching for many years. Okay, now go. His eyebrows.
There's nothing more criminal than to watch boring. I want someone to bring about an emotion in me, whether that's happy, sad, love, hate, whatever. When I'm watching TV, especially reality TV, I want to have an opinion about the people that I'm watching on TV. So is it just so happened that this season is mostly frustration? Yes. Mm-hmm. But the other way has probably my favorite couple of all time in Kenny and Armando, who I just am in love with, but unfortunately I don't get to talk about them. I have to talk about Colt and Larissa. So back to Colt's eyebrows. So Colt thinks he's so cool, and he does this like little thing with his eyebrows where he does this like inquisitive look. He's like, oh, like I'm trying to be, huh? And it's so annoying. And then in this most recent episode, he talks about sex in front of his mother.
Yikes.
Like, oof. All the time. And it is so incredibly uncomfortable. Colt, shut up.
I commend people. So people that have a close enough relationship with their parents where they can just openly talk about that stuff, I find it cool. But talking about how your partner is a loud sex haver, that's not a word or phrase, but talking about how loud your partner is in bed to your mom just seems like that should be a no-no.
Yes. There's so many like little things. Like Debbie will feed him sometimes,
oh
like
my God.
With a fork. It's just like not. It's so weird. But Colt, like with his sex hair in that scene where he's just like, he's got the little like faux hawk that he clearly styled right before so that he looks cool. Like he's trying to look cool, like, yeah, I partied all night and I had sex, mom. Ugh. And then Jess like calls him out. So then we had the very unfortunate beach scene in this past episode where Colt wears swimsuit bottoms that are just far too small for him. Like he really just needs to get a size up. Jess is like, you're a baby boy. Like, you're a baby. You're a baby. And then Cole's like, no, I was a man. I was married. I pay my bills. I'm a man.
Apparently, what you need to be a man is to pay bills and get married at least once. Mm-hmm. Then you're the big man. Yeah. No, I like. So here's the thing, right? As a bigger man, size wise, not human wise, I understand the idea, like you're trying to flaunt yourself, you're being confident, that's all well and good, Mr. Colt. But then none of your behavior speaks that way, so it doesn't work, right? So the way he takes pot shots at, so I talked earlier about how Debbie hypnotizes him back. So when they go to meet Jess's family, Debbie and Jess end up in this position where she's like trying to argue out of a situation of, oh, it's too soon, it's too quick, like you shouldn't be, you guys should take it slow. And then Jess flies off the handle and cusses out Debbie. And then Colt stops this in his too cool, I'm very cool, I'm very calm manner, and gets a cab for Debbie and sends Debbie back to the hotel and doesn't leave with her, which I thought was, damn, I was like, this is not the Colt I know. And then the next morning, in a matter of 10 seconds in a papaya feed or a guava feed, he was convinced by Debbie that that was not right and you need to, you know, say something. And then he like takes a shot at Jess the very next scene. Colt was never someone that I liked. So it's very easy for me to screw with him. But also you can tell that the publicity he got from the show the first season has given him this newfound confidence that he definitely did not have before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually started to see instances of this from the season 6 finale or like reunion.
Oh my God, the villain,
where he
villain
like
cult.
He showed up with like a goatee and he's wearing all black and he was like villain culty. Oh yeah, so that's the thing, is like Larissa has a very strong accent, and so she pronounces his name culty, not Colt, culty.
She, no, that's not even the best part, is in this season at one point she calls, I want to say she calls Jess, but she saved Jess's number on her phone as culty girl.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, you even spell it Colty. Gotcha. Okay. So
maybe she thinks that's what his name is.
There's no way. Like, you have to sign documents with each other's names. Like, there's no way.
I guess so.
And like, you're Facebook friends at least, right? Like, he's not misspelling his own name.
Well, I mean, they're not friends anymore.
Not anymore. I don't know. Okay. So then let's talk about Larissa then. I think that's enough on Colty for now. Basically, we leave Colty. He's in Brazil right now with Jess. They're doing well. He's gotten the blessing to like propose to her if he wants to. He's at least gotten the blessing to date her from the dad. But Debbie's not happy about it. Debbie's more suspicious of Jess now. That's where we leave them. We leave them in Brazil. And now we move on to Larissa. What's Larissa been up to, Liana?
Okay, well, so Larissa is obviously having to deal with all of her domestic violence charges. So she's divorced from Colty. She's now living with her friend Carmen, at the beginning of the season, at least. That's where we see her living with a friend of hers. And she's having to do all of her like anger management classes and her community service. She's on probation, all of that stuff, trying to get her charges reduced. And it's a little bit complicated, the legal situation here, because so when Colt and Larissa got married, they then can apply for a green card for Larissa. But the thing is that there's something called an affidavit of support where Colt says that he'll support Larissa. And it's said that Colt pulls it, like he's like, oh, I pulled my affidavit of support. So yeah. Larissa doesn't actually have her green card yet. And it's kind of a little bit of a gray area. So I'm not entirely sure exactly what's going to happen with that. But that's kind of where Larissa's at.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting how what's going on with them and how she's still there, despite, you know, having the police stuff going on. She's been in and out of court multiple times, and now they're not married, and the affidavit of support's gone. But somehow she's still there, and, you know, in the midst of, in between the two seasons, goes through a glow up, goes through, does her process, and now is coming out ready to get back in the dating scene, because when we left her at the finale, when we got villain Colty, she introduced Ericky, aka Eric, who was her new boo. And now,
no, they were still together at the end of season six. It was the end of Happily Ever After where she introduces Eric.
Yes. Oh, I mixed the two finales, but that's the last time we saw Larissa. She had Ericky.
Right. Yeah. So she was dating this guy, Eric, who is just
also the worst.
No. Yeah. So she was with Eric for a while and then they ended up splitting up because, and then there was like a bunch of drama. She got like a restraining order or something like that for, because people were like stalking her related to him. Anyway, so Adam, her lawyer, Larissa's lawyer, was like, stay away with Eric. But then in this season, we actually see her and Eric get back together.
Yeah, yeah, in a move that leaves one to be like, wow, Colty did that. Because I think 100% she gets back with Ericky because she feels lonely and she wants what Colty has.
Well, that, and she needs a storyline. So the other thing that happens is Larissa. Okay, so, oh my God, this is so complicated. So Larissa ends up calling Jess, who Colt is dating, to kind of like warn her, which then it's funny because we start to see this come to fruition, because especially Larissa warns Jess about Debbie, that
Debbie
she's
the
a
wolf.
Yes, she's a wolf. But Larissa has a penchant for just calling random women, because apparently when Eric and her were broken up, Eric talked to this woman, Natalie, and Larissa discovered this on Eric's phone. And so Larissa just goes ahead and calls Natalie, and they have like a heart to heart in this most recent episode, which is insane. Like, that's probably the most excited I've been to watch 90 Day Fiancé, because
usually
Natalie just goes off.
Yeah, usually the next time on doesn't faze me. I'm actively excited for the next time just to see if we get more of this Natalie drama, because it is gold.
Oh my gosh. So Natalie is saying that, oh yeah, Eric was bad mouthing you. He said you didn't shower. You're a bad mother. And then apparently Colt and Eric hung out and were comparing the way that Larissa performed oral sex. And it was just like, and there's a lot of bleeping and it's really crazy. And then Larissa, when she's sort of summarizing it, uses the word pejorative, which is amazing. I'm like super proud of her. She's got a great vocabulary.
What does that mean?
Like a kind of like a derogatory way.
I see.
So they talked about my sex in the pejorative, but in the pejorative way, because Eric comes home and she's like in the middle of her conversation with Natalie. So she has to kind of like end it. But oh my God. Yeah. Oh yeah. And they live. Okay. So wait, did we talk about how she moved in with Eric? Okay. So Carmen kicked her out because Carmen kicked Larissa out because Carmen wants nothing to do with Eric because Eric is not good. Like, whole stalking thing, like we said. So anyway, so then Larissa moves in with Eric, and Eric's roommate, whose name is David and looks like he was plucked from 1997 that he should be singing in like Wheatus or Smash Mouth or something like that. And so all three of them are living together in the same home.
Yeah. Now, and she's excited. She thinks that David is the type of roommate that she can vibe with because they're both nerds, herself and David. So.
Oh, and when Puya said glow up, yes, Larissa like lost some weight. She looks great, but she also is like obsessed with plastic surgery. So she's kind of a little bit unrecognizable at the beginning of this season. And she's like all about getting cosmetic procedures.
Yeah, no, she's all about it. And when I said glow up, I meant like she believes she's gone through the glow up. Or she has. I don't know. I'm not one to judge. But yeah, so then with Larissa, we kind of leave her at now she's living with Ericky. And she's going to confront, oh, she's going to try and talk to Natalie and meet up with Natalie at some point. So I'm excited for that. And then we'll see what happens. I imagine her and Ericky are not going to last beyond the next episode.
No.
That's my prediction. So
Yeah, I don't think so either.
And then we see where she goes next. You know, we see, is she going to have another season where now she's trying to live out on her own, or does she move back in with the friend, with Carmen? I don't know. But I'll tell you this. I'll be honest with you. I didn't care about anything going on in Larissa's storyline until the Natalie stuff. None of it. I didn't care. I didn't care that she went on the date with the Egyptian guy. I didn't care about her doing pole dancing. I didn't care about her deciding what she wants to do and going to that muscle contracting tone place. I didn't. Now I'm excited. So I will ask you this. Whose story are you more excited to see play out now, Colt or Larissa?
Well, I mean, Larissa, just because of the cliffhanger that we got to see. But to be honest, both of them, like I said, I'm happy that they're on this season.
You are. And I'm happy that you're happy.
They're so dramatic. And I don't, because here's the thing. There's a lot of speculation about what's crafted, what's real, what's not, in terms of a lot of the drama that happens. I don't care. I don't care if Colt and Larissa's drama is scripted. It's so messy. It's so messy, but in the most entertaining way possible.
It is. Okay. And with that being said, let's move on to the next couple here who I want to talk about. Very messy, but this is a rare situation where I actually like one of them. So I want to talk about them. I'm sure we have a lot to talk about here. Let's talk about Angela and Michael.
Okay, yes. So this is a little interesting because the majority of the couples that have been on Happily Ever After were on the original, like, 90 Day Fiancé series. But Angela and Michael were actually originally on before the 90 days, which is where you have a couple. There's one person from the United States, one person who's a foreigner, and they haven't actually met yet. And they're going to go meet for the very first time. And most of the couples fall apart. This one, they actually have applied for the K-1 visa. It's unclear at the moment. Like, they're saying, like, oh, he's going to be rejected. They, like, might be denied. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole debate, which is their whole storyline this season, about whether or not they should apply for the spousal visa, which is a different style of visa. But anyway, we've seen them on seasons 2 and 3 of Before the 90 Days. Then they were on the regular season of 90 Day Fiancé season 7, despite still not having a K-1 visa. And now we see them here on Happily Ever After. They are also a couple that creates a lot of drama, a lot of tension. And I think there's a reason why they've been brought back so many times.
And they've been on a bunch of seasons at this point. They've been kind of a staple. I think Angela is someone who thinks and wants. I think Angela wants what Darcy got, which is her own show. That's how I feel, based on her behavior at the last reunion we saw her, which was the last Before the 90 Day season that went down.
Yeah, Angela is always picking fights with people. So Angela is a chain smoking meemaw from Georgia. She's got grandkids. One of her daughters is in jail, so she's taking care of her grandkids. And she met Michael, who's Nigerian. They met online. They started talking, and now they're in this relationship. And like I said, they've applied for the K-1, but kind of unclear whether or not that's going to happen. Right,
because so Michael went as far as he got to his final interview at the embassy, and he was denied in the room, and now it's unsure whether it's a denial with which needs more information. Like, they didn't like outright reject him. He's not like out of the woods kind of thing, so they still have a chance.
So the way that the K-1 visa works is, first you send your application to the USCIS, which is the United States Immigration Services. And then if they approve your visa, then they send it to a consulate, which is in the country of the fiancé's residency. So they sent it to Nigeria. The consulate is what they said rejected him. So they sent it back to the USCIS. So it's kind of complicated, the legalese. But Angela's lawyer is like, no, like, let's just wait. Let's see if you can. But, you know, I think like I can completely empathize with, well, wanting your partner to be there ASAP. The problem is that then if they go and they get married, the K-1 visa application now becomes completely void because they're already married and they have to restart with a spousal visa, which then takes another year and a half. So like if they just waited to see what would happen with the K-1, that could potentially be faster. But, you know, there's no drama.
No, there's no drama in that. I think that the whole thing is like, well, we could risk it. We could wait 4 months and then it gets rejected anyways. Why waste the 4 months when we could have used the 4 months within the 1 year and a half processing time for the spousal visa, et cetera, et cetera. Exactly. And I think the most devastating part of this couple is when Michael got rejected and cried on camera, which made me feel sad for Michael.
Yeah. So I mean, when you're talking about one part of the couple that you like, I'm going to assume you're talking about Michael because Angela is like a gaslighting.
No, Michael, the Nigerian partner. Man who really loves Donald Trump. Him.
Yeah. So Michael's just super, like super adorable and super sweet. He's Angela accuses him of manipulating her with cake because Angela is just someone who's incredibly jealous. It's like women exist and Angela is upset. Like they try to go meet with a couple of expats. And as soon as Angela sees their women, she's like, done. Like, nope.
They sat down and in a matter of 4 seconds, Angela said, I'm not doing this. We're leaving. Gets up, walks away. Michael follows her. She gets in the car. She says, wedding's off. She says, wedding is off because why would you bring me to a hangout with women? And poor Michael has to like put out this fire of like, hey, but like they're Doa's friends and he's not here yet. We were going to wait for him, but you left. And she's screaming. It's unbelievable. And she yells at him for if she hears a ringtone, that's not what she's heard before. It's such an incredibly terrifying, controlling relationship that Michael's in. We've seen Angela butt heads with all his friends at the reunion last season they were on. It's just such a messy, tumultuous relationship. And now the creme de la creme is Angela is flying over to Nigeria to get married there. And they're going to live there for a little bit by the sounds of it.
Well, no, I mean, I think they would get married and then come back because so what's complicated is that Angela does support, a family. Yeah. And so she can't really move to Nigeria, even though Michael is trying to convince her to do so. And so that definitely makes it complicated. The other thing about Angela is that, you know, Michael wants to have babies. Yeah. And like I said, Angela is a chain smoker. She's older. They went to a fertility clinic in Nigeria and the technician was like, we found one egg. And like, they were like, oh, well, technically, like you could tote a baby, but you're going to need a different egg. So she was trying to convince Skyla, her daughter, to give her an egg. And there's like a really classic line in 90 Day History where Angela's like, I just need your egg. Like I can tote it. I just need your egg.
Never heard anyone else say tote and baby in the same sentence as much as she does. And it bothers me. I don't get it.
Yeah. But then she's actually dealing with like she went to a doctor in the United States and there's actually a little bit of a health scare that's going on for her. So anyway, it's just there's a lot here.
Yeah. No, for the insane person that Angela is, I think when you look closely at her, she actually is doing a lot for her family. Right. She's taking care of the grandchildren. She's taking care of her mom, who is very sick as well. And she's just like, there is moments of her where I feel sympathy and I want to like be like, no, you're amazing. But then we see the way she treats Michael and I feel bad about that. I feel really, Michael looks like he's aged significantly since we first saw him that first time on Before the 90 Days.
I mean, they have been on for this is their fourth season.
But has he aged now on the 9 years?
Like appropriately. Yeah, I don't know. Look, okay, here's the one thing that I will give Angela is at least she has semi tried to embrace the culture of her partner.
Semi isn't even like, I think better than most of any of these couples we're talking about right now. She definitely has embraced it. So She is the one, she successfully gets Michael to do the role reversal and be the, do the cooking and stuff. And she doesn't want to do it at all. And she makes him do it to prepare the meal that they were going to have with her mom, who, with his mom, who his mom was like, I couldn't believe Michael was cooking. So she successfully does that. She does fine. She is still like a bit, there is that culture shock when they saw a rat in the house. She was terrified. She don't want to deal with that. Michael had to do it, even though you could tell Michael hated doing it, which by the way, just putting that out there, if we saw a rat in this apartment, that's you and not me. I cannot handle a rat. That is all you. I will freak out worse than Angela, just gonna put that out there.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm fine with that.
And then they go to the market to get food, and she's like, "Oh, I don't like this. Like, what is this? Why is this food? Do you have anything packaged? Like, is the right? Do you have packaged rice? What is? Why is this out in the open?" It's like, because that's how it grows, you know, in nature, perhaps.
Yeah, no, they bought oil, they bought rice, and then they went to go buy tomatoes, and Angela's like, this is getting out of hand, and it was like, oh no, she saw a fresh vegetable.
Yeah, where are the cans?
Like, do you have any rice in a bag? Like, no. So, yeah, I mean, look, again, it's all relative. So when we talk about, like, embracing the culture, it's really just compared to everybody else.
Do you guys have Walmart here? Do you guys have Uncle Ben's here? That's what I'm looking for. But yeah, so then my favorite scene is when, because here's the part, right? For all the demonic stuff Angela does by berating Michael, she definitely has embraced she's friendly with her family. She's friendly with his mom. So I love the interactions with her and his mom. And my favorite scene might have been when his food isn't that good. So she makes his mom try the pizza that she ordered, and then the mom likes it, and the mom's trying to be fancy eating it with the fork and knife, and then she's like, no, we eat it like this, and she's like, oh, you know what, I actually wanted to eat it like that. Then they eat pizza together, and that was very heartwarming for me, a lot, even though, you know, Angela was like, yeah, this is American food, and I'm like, oh honey, like, get your history right. I mean, this iteration might be, but pizza's not American.
Isn't pizza actually American?
Is it actually? I don't think so.
Isn't there something where it's like...
Oh, is it like nachos aren't Mexican type of thing?
Okay.
Are you Googling it? Okay,
so according to this, it says Naples.
See? It's not Naples, Indiana.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, okay. I thought that was like, yeah, all right, well, whatever. Anyway, not important. Look, I'm not on trial here, okay? I guess that would be Larissa, who will one day be on trial. But back to Angela and Michael. I think my favorite thing about that whole scene was Angela wearing the Flawless shirt.
Oh my God.
Although maybe, I don't think she was wearing it by the evening, but during the day when they went grocery shopping.
Angela's shirt collection is so funny to me. Like, the first time, remember the first time she met Michael and she was wearing one of those, like, you know, the bargain bin t-shirts that have the funny sayings, which I used to only wear those t-shirts in high school. You can tell I was very cool and popular. She's just rocking that type of, like, Flawless or I'm cool or chic, whatever. It's that. It's all that.
The amount of confidence that Angela has is truly just extraordinary. I am quite impressed.
Yeah. No, me too. Me too. Is there anything else you want to talk about with regards to them? I hope we find out that the checkup with the doctor, it's not a medical like issue. And then I am curious where they go with that. But I don't want anyone to be sick. So.
Yeah, I mean, of course, like, you wouldn't wish that on anyone. Exactly. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see how it goes. We'll have to see if they actually get married or not.
We'll see. It's an ongoing saga. I'm looking for. Oh, she bought him two suits, one plain white suit and one purple suit. That was fun.
Yeah, those are fantastic. Yeah. Michael just looks so happy.
He did.
They're insane. So, like, the purple one, oh my God, it's crazy, but at the same time, like, it's perfect. It totally fits.
Yeah, Michael, like, I if and hopefully when Michael ends up in the States, I want to see that footage on TV. I want to see Michael, because it's very much speaks to me that Michael is seeing stuff and wants to see the stuff that he's seen in movies or TV or anything. He wants that part of the culture. He wants to experience it. So I want Michael going to a burger place for the first time. I want Michael going to the movie theater there. I want Michael at Times Square. I want all of the Michael America stuff. I want all of it.
I mean, I think they're probably going to be on our television screens for a while now. So there is actually a 90 Day Fiancé What Now, which is an online like Webba series. Is that what you call it? What do you call
a webisode?
Webisode?
What's a Webby series?
A web.
Last I heard, Webby is not happy that Colt is falling for another Brazilian.
Oh my gosh. She's done. So yeah. So I'm sure we'll get an update on them in the future. You know, obviously with the rest of this season as well, but I can see their story continuing.
Yeah, I can see it too. Okay. Next one. We have two left. Liana, where do you want to go to leave an automatic last one?
Okay. Well, I want to talk about someone who we actually saw in this most recent episode. So that would be Paul and Carini.
Mm-hmm.
So Paul and Carini, we met originally also on Before the 90 Days. So they were on Before the 90 Days season one and season two. And so I watched the very first season of 90 Day Fiancé that I ever saw was actually Before the 90 Days season one. Mm-hmm. So Paul and Carini hold a very special place in my heart because they were one of the couples from the very first season that I saw. I've, of course, like gone back and rewatched all of the older series since to catch up. But Paul is from Kentucky. Carini is from Brazil. They met online. They started talking. And this is, again, Before the 90 Days. So Paul went to go visit Carini in Brazil. So the backstory with them is that Paul is a felon. He's burned down his house to collect the insurance money. I'm pretty sure he has a restraining order out on him, or maybe someone has. Anyway, there's some restraining order business. So Paul's a freaking mess. So they weren't able to get a K-1 visa. So what ended up happening was Paul had to move to Brazil and live in Brazil for a while. Him and Carini actually had a kid. They got married. And then eventually they were able to get the spousal visa. So now they're moving to Kentucky finally after these two seasons.
Yes. Yes. So they are the one couple that I can think of that has really jumped all over this franchise. They started off on Before the 90. They were on the other way because Paul moves to Brazil for a minute. And now they're over here in Happily Ever After. And then I'm assuming the next time there's a regular 90 day, they're going to be there too. So they're just everywhere. They're absolutely everywhere. So for me, they're fun. I remember their story best. I do feel like Paul knows that what the memes are of him because I just have to talk about this right away. I'm sorry. When Paul is trying to get tampons for Carini at the store, and he's describing it in his confessional. He does the finger and the hand around the finger just like the way he proposed or wanted to propose and was talking to Carini's dad about it. So I think he knows full well what he's doing. He runs away. I know he knows what he's doing now, which saddens me because part of me wanted to keep believing that he's dumb. I think he's smarter with the TV content.
No. I 100% disagree with you.
You think he hasn't seen that people like that stuff?
Have you seen their cameos? They're messes.
Oh, I have not seen their cameos, so.
Yeah, no. There's absolutely no way. One of the best things about Paul is when he gets so Paul also has a hard time processing his emotions. So what happens is whenever he can't handle anything, he just runs away. Mm. But the hilarious part is that he's I can't remember what the proper term is, but it's like when your feet sort of bow outwards, not whatever, I'll figure it out. So he runs hilariously and he can't really run, so he just more waddles like a duck, and so he just gets super frustrated and he just waddles away and the camera crew has to go follow him. It's so funny.
Yeah, I do enjoy this couple. So now they're moving to the States, right? This is what they were supposed to do from the get-go, but Paul didn't have money, and then the marriage stuff was in question because Paul has this criminal history, blah, 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 blah. And then now, finally, the visa's through. They're coming to the States. But Carini is really, really not having it. If anything, Carini's looking for any excuse she can to go back right after they've moved. And
I don't know. I don't necessarily think so. Like, they're just a really complicated relationship because there's so many ups and downs. And like, Carini has like broken off the wedding with them before. But at the same time, they keep like coming back to each other. So like, I think she may threaten, but I don't know how serious she is.
That's fair. That is fair. They have gone through many roller coasters. I will say she did not like, so she, the scene with him and him opening his car and her panic, that was a lot. She definitely did not like that car. I'll tell you that right now. She hated that car. She hated the first. So actually, I was about to say, so I need to ask you this. Is that we saw him go and see a place with Carini. What did you think of that place?
You mean the one that was just like you buy as is and it's a was completely trashed? That part?
I was like, I feel like legally you can't even sell this on the open market. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, I think I saw that online too. Somebody being like, oh, I don't know if you can actually do this. Whatever. It's just part of Paul just being like, oh, look, if I show her something so bad, then she'll be okay with like whatever we can do. But so like I said, Paul is a felon. And so that makes it very complicated for him to get a job.
Yeah.
He's also a deadbeat, which makes it very hard for him to get a job because he doesn't want to. So, you know, he goes to his mother for support. And his mother is so like, I thought she was weird when we first met her in the first season because she gives Paul some of her hair to take with him when he goes to Brazil. But she's actually like the beacon of sanity here, because I think she's probably so used to Paul just relying on her and his Paul's dad, her husband, which we never actually see in the series. But anyway, and so, you know, we hear a lot from them, but you know, Paul, which is how Carini will say Paul's name, Paul. So Paul is, you know, like his mom is like, oh, I can't help you. I can't support you. I'll put you up in a hotel for a couple of days. But Paul's mom and Carini are actually pretty close. And the baby Pierre, you know, Paul's mom really likes. I feel like if Paul's mom had the choice, she would just get rid of Paul and keep Carini and the baby.
Yeah. And I think that's been her secret weapon is, let me keep getting rid of Paul, and then at some point I can take over the family as the head of the household, because Paul just can't function as a person, really. I will say the one time where his qualities ended up redeeming themselves is when he got the new house they've got, like the little studio, and his germaphobeness really allowed him to clean up and shape up that house, which was great. That was a good scene, especially, which I'm not going to be talking to you about with, but looking at some of the home renovations on The Other Way this season, I think Paul did an outstanding job with this place. Granted, it was a smaller space, but still good.
Yeah. I mean, so they do end up finding a place to live in the United States, which is what we see in this past episode. And so, you know, it seems like things are coming together for them.
It is. And I'm excited to see where they go next. Paul, to me, will always remain as one of the number one meme makers of this show at the moment, at the very least, until someone else replaces him. But I'm excited to see where they go next. I hope they're in a good place when we get to them at the reunion. And baby Pierre was just funny to hear you say for some reason. So I'm glad you said it.
Okay. I don't know what that means.
I don't know either.
Okay. Right.
And last, but certainly not least, because there are so many more 90 Day Fiancé couples. But for this show, this season, last couple, we've got Tanya and Sinjin. Liana, walk us through the quick summary of this couple.
Okay, so Tanya and Sinjin were originally on season 7, the most recent season, I believe, of 90 Day Fiancé. And Tanya is like very much this free spirit. She's from Connecticut. And she was like off traveling. She's like traveling the world. And she met Sinjin. And Sinjin was bartending in South Africa at the time. Mm-hmm. So they like fell in love immediately. And so she decided, I think, to stay in South Africa for 3 more months. They were living together. They were super happy. And then they made the decision to come back to the United States. So they applied for the K-1 visa, got the K-1 visa, and moved into Tanya's mother's she shed, essentially the like shed behind her mother's house.
Yes.
And so they were living there for a while. Neither of them had jobs. Tanya is a mess and went like in the middle of their 90. Okay, so let me just, they have 90 days to get married from the moment that Sinjin moves to the United States. Okay. Majority of the couples that go through the 90-day fiance process already know that they want to get married, but they were like still questioning whether or not they even wanted to get married. And Tanya up and leaves in the middle of their 90 days for a month. She cut their time short by 33% because she had to go learn to be a witch doctor somewhere. Where did she go? I can't remember. Not important. So she's just like off hanging out, learning how to be a witch doctor while poor Sinjin is stuck in the she shed with nothing to do because he just moved there. He doesn't have his green card. He can't work. So they're a mess. So now in this season, they just move into a new apartment, despite the fact that neither of them have jobs. And Tanya broke her foot.
Yeah.
That's, I think that's,
no, that was a magnificent summary. I love the passion.
Tanya is the worst. She must, okay, here's the deal. She must have saw that she got a horrible edit in season 7. Like, she was just garbage. Now this season, it's Sinjin's turn.
So she gets him to, he moves, okay? He moves, and she is, what do you know? She says to his face, hey, I don't think you're my soulmate. I think my soulmate was my previous relationship. And the man moved continents to be with you. The man stayed here while you went abroad and then came back. And you left them alone with your family and the shoe shed.
The she shed.
Yes. It is so sad. So sad. I mean, she did get a villainous edit. And then we come into this season and that edit is gone because, you know, she broke her foot and she cannot do anything. And
oh my God, but she's so, it's so funny. She's like, oh, Sinjin, can you carry me to the bathroom? And then she's just like hopping around doing other stuff later. Be consistent.
Please be consistent. Yeah. So now Sinjin, on top of not having a job and feeling questionable about being called not a soulmate, is going to be taking care of Tanya, bathing Tanya, feeding Tanya, not feeding Tanya, but bathing Tanya and taking care of Tanya and being the primary bread earner. But you can't do that without a job. So he's on the search for a job, right? And he applies to this Irish pub and he's very excited about his job opportunity. And then he kind of word vomits at the interview and tells them more than they need to know, probably. And then is told to pour a pint of Guinness as an example of his work. And then he doesn't do it right, I guess. And they're like, we'll let you know. And then he gets sad drunk at the pub after getting that answer and then goes home and Tanya's not happy. And this has kind of been their storyline on this show, on this season, where it's like, she's not happy with him drinking. And he's not happy because he feels like he's starting to get tied down and he doesn't know what he wants and he doesn't know if he can just grab a bag and leave. Like, he doesn't want to lose out on that. And he doesn't like that he's not the soulmate, but he also wants to provide, but he also wants her to work, but she can't work. And he's mad that she might have arthritis after this. It's a whole hot mess.
Yeah. And then we find out that apparently Sinjin's grandmother died,
oh my God,
passed away,
yeah, while he moved.
When Tanya just up and noped on out of there to go learn to be a witch doctor. And Sinjin, so one of the things is like when you do the 90-day fiance process, the K-1 visa process, you come to the United States on a K-1 visa and then you cannot leave the United States until you get something called advanced parole, which is like this travel document, or you get your green card. Because otherwise, if you leave, the U.S. government's like, oh, you abandoned your application, so we're not going to give you your green card. So anyway, so Sinjin couldn't go regardless. No. But now he has the ability to travel. He can leave. And so finding out, like, so, I mean, of course there's that, but then also, like, his brother had a blood clot and, like, almost died or something. And so he wants to go back and visit South Africa.
Yeah, Sinjin's family went through the most while he was there, and at the worst time that he was there, because he was literally not doing anything productive, and he couldn't justify being there. So, not good. I feel bad for him. I don't understand Tanya at all. I will say, I kind of forgot about some of the Tanya stuff until you refreshed my memory, because I had definitely fallen for the edit a little bit. I felt bad for her, mostly. But now I just feel bad for both of them. And
yeah,
very much.
I don't like Tanya. Sinjin is okay. I think he's just in a bad situation. I think he feels trapped. I can have a little bit more empathy for what he's going through. So I kind of like, I understand it from that perspective, but at the same time, like, it's not like, how do you move into a new apartment and just like neither of them have jobs? Like, stay in the she shed for a little bit longer till you get a job.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a struggle, but save that money. Get an income, then who knows? Maybe you even decide to spruce up the shed. Who knows? But I think getting an apartment while none of you can work and one of you is unsuccessful at nailing the bartender job so far. We don't know. He could get a callback. We have no idea.
I doubt it.
Because we didn't see them this past episode. So maybe he got the callback. But I think the answers at the interview were not great. I think the guy felt for him and like understood where he was coming from, because, like, you know, the family, he's moving, he's trying to provide for the family. But then I think it's a wrong move, and I think this is a rookie mistake. If you have an interview at a food or a beverage place, no matter what, do not stay after the interview. The move is to leave for sure. If you're feeling hungry, if you're feeling peckish, or if you're trying to get a drink on, go somewhere else. That is a mistake to me. Because, like, the next shot is him throwing back the beer, and then a shot, and then another beer. Like, bruh.
Yeah, I mean, he's taking shots there. Like, I'm sure that's part of the interview process as well, right? To, like, see, you know, if you're going to hire someone to work at your bar, they're going to be around alcohol. Like, how are they going to handle themselves? So I'm sure it's, like, a little bit of a trick.
Yeah. Well, because the guy said, he's like, oh, you poured this. It's on the house. It's for you. You're like, oh, thank you. Drink it, like, nicely. Leave. But it's not like it was, like, a practical example of, like, okay, so a patron of the bar just said, hey, do a shot with me. And paid for the shot. Now, what? Show us how you're going to throw back that shot. Can you tolerate it? Okay, you got it. Good. Okay. And then how much would you like that? That doesn't happen. So I think it was a mistake on Sinjin's part. Although I feel bad for Sinjin, but also Sinjin, buddy, you moved. You cannot be having a life crisis of, hey, what if I want to grab a backpack and leave? It's like you're talking about wanting a family. You can't be doing that.
No, I mean, she wants a family. And, like, he doesn't even want to stay in Connecticut. Like, he wants to move.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the way that he even talked to you was like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if this is, you know, going to be super, like, forever. And then when Tanya's like, you're not my soulmate. Like,
he should have left earlier is the problem.
Like, yeah.
He should have, like, because there were so many signs before they tied the knot that he chose to overlook and is now regretting. And, like, now he can't leave because what is he going to be, the husband that leaves his broken-legged wife? Like, that's a demon move.
So I don't know. Maybe those crazy kids will make it.
Maybe. I don't know if I'm rooting for them. I think I am. At least I'm hoping Sinjin figures his stuff out, and I hope Tanya gets unwitch-doctored. But I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
That wraps it up, though. Is there anything else you want to touch on with regards to 90 Day anything before we head on out?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have time to cover 90 Day Fiancé in full. I'm so happy that you're doing this, but I am a little bit jealous not to talk about the other way. So can I just give like a few thoughts really quick?
Sure. You can pepper him in right now.
Okay. Please, when you talk about Tim, call him Cheese Stick. Okay. And only refer to him as Cheese Stick because that's his nickname and that's hilarious. Also, Kenny, I already talked about this, but Kenny and Armando are amazing and I absolutely love them. And just, oh my gosh, everything about them, I just absolutely love. Jenny, give up. Samit is a pathological liar. He's probably never going to get divorced. I'm telling you, he found that random guy and like hired him. Oh, his lawyer. Sure, buddy. I see what you're doing. Even though he's super sweet and I was kind of like rooting for him, but like he catfished you in the first place. Like, what are you thinking? But I'm rooting for them. I don't know. I have very complicated emotions when it comes to that couple. And then Devin, just cut your losses. Jihoon is a little bit of a mess. I don't know if he will ever be what you want. I mean, it's not like they got pregnant also, and I feel like that's another relationship that will probably not succeed.
Jihoon and
knows?
Devin,
they keep trying to make it work.
Yeah, they're the Osuelu and Kalani on the other show to me.
Yes. Big yeah. Time. Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's it. I think those are all my thoughts.
I'll be sure to add those in, Liana. I do wish, you know, from a personal standpoint, I do wish that you'd be here to join me through this journey of going through the 90-day fiance stuff. You are.
I'll pop in from time to time.
And I would love to have you. I have an open invitation back on here. You know that. Not just because you can easily threaten my living situation because we live in the same apartment, but just because you are a great person and I appreciate you. Where can people find you? What are you up to? Give us all the plugs.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Liana RHAP. I'm doing the Survivor rewatch that we're doing as part of RHAP. So Mike and I got together with special guest Chantel Francis, who was our guest on the B&B this week to talk about Survivor Micronesia. It was the effing stick episode. So, so great. That should be out sometime soon. And then I also covered on the Drag Race podcast, talking about the finale of All Stars season 5, as well as episode 4 of Canada's Drag Race. So look out for that as well. And then at some point, potentially, we'll be doing some Big Brother preseason podcasts. I'm technically supposed to record one for a cast that's like not even announced yet. Who knows what's going to happen with that? But at some point, I will be on talking about Big Brother, whether or not it's Liana Saturdays with Taryn or in some other capacity. So look out for that as well.
I'm very excited for the Big Brother stuff, obviously. We all are. I think everyone's still on pins and needles trying to figure out when we're going to find out what this list is and who is on it. You can find me on every major social media platform at Pooyaism, POOYAISM. I will be focusing on 90 Day Fiancé and Big Brother for the duration of the next couple of months. I was about to say summer, but we're almost in the end of summer at this point. I will say you are going to see a lot of new faces come through these beloved 90-day doors on this podcast. I will be bringing in people from the new class of 2020. I'll be bringing people in that you've already met before. And one way or another, we're going to have a lot of fun talking about this show. It gets messy, but we're here to clean it all up. So until next time, take care and do not worry. The Hot Mess Express continues.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.